It's intermission time here at the Blossom Music Center, and here is our intermission host, Klaus-Georg Roy, Publications Director and Program Annotator for the Cleveland Orchestra. Klaus?
Thank you, Robert. If anybody tuned in a little late to this broadcast, it may have been a bit of a shock to hear a very familiar voice declaiming the words of Abraham Lincoln and to think for a moment, so that's what he sounded like. Well, the voice in Copland's Lincoln portrait was, of course, that of our much-admired Carl Haas, and we are glad to have him as our guest today. This is a bit of a switch, isn't it, with Dr. Haas being on the receiving end of questions rather than sharing with us his latest adventure in good music. We all have been listening to him for some years to our great benefit. Even those of us who are professional musicians have learned very much from him. What endless imagination you have, Carl, both in subject matter and in presentation.
You know, Klaus, I must say I've recently reread some of Belloc's poems, you know, the English poet. And he has a tiny little thing which is short enough to quote. It's about a water insect, an insect that lives on the water. And all he says is, if he'd stopped to think how he did it, he would sink.
So you really don't have time to do that, time to think. It just has to come.
I just don't want to think. I just do.
Would you let us in on your workshop a little and tell us how you put together a program in your series? We realize, just as you pointed out, that much of what you say comes out of the inspiration of the moment and your own vast store of knowledge. But how do you do that in view of the timing of each program?
Well, as you well know, Klaus, no one does that better than you do. You worry about the music, hoping that what you have to say about the music will come naturally. You back time. As you probably know, I don't use a script, hence I must have a listing of the musical selections. And as we get halfway into the program, I see I have so much music left. That means I have only that much time to talk. So that's all there's to it. You just go along and adjust yourself, which I admit is a matter of experience, surely, but in the long run, it's a matter of a constant challenge. And when it goes awry, then you realize how dangerous a business this is. If it goes too much awry,
you can always make a fix if you want to.
You can find an engineer who can go along with you.
But I like the idea that if sometimes you misspeak yourself, you don't fix
Isn't
it.
Isn't that horrible?
So that it is natural. No, it's not. No, that's very natural.
The reason I don't fix it is I don't want to hear myself say it again.
You must get an enormous amount of mail to your adventures in good music, since it is internationally syndicated. How do you deal with all the suggestions and questions that come your way?
I have a box. I have a suggestion box which I cherish, because there are a lot of fabulous suggestions. And I really appreciate it when people take the time not only to write, obviously, that's already something to be grateful for, but when they bother to suggest to you, why don't you do this and do that, I weigh each one very, very, very carefully. I must admit that it doesn't always fit within the framework, but I never let it go unnoticed. I think it's a great thing when people participate to that extent.
They really respond.
Yes, they do. And they don't always agree with you, but that's good.
One of your activities in recent years has been the wonderful music festival at sea. Would you tell us briefly about those twice-yearly trips?
Well, those are a bit of a utopia almost come true. It's a festival with wonderful musicians aboard a great ship. It happens to be a French ship in each instance. And in January, the trip goes to the Caribbean islands. And in the summer, just coming up now, it goes into the Mediterranean. I hope not into the sea, but I mean in the Mediterranean. And always a different itinerary. And for this forthcoming one, for instance, we have such minor forces as Rostropovich and Maureen Forrester and the English Chamber Orchestra, Marie Pariah, and people like that. And we make music, we discuss, we play impromptu, we play premeditatedly a concert, but there's always music. And if a music lover isn't a music lover to that extent, he shouldn't come on the ship.
You mean if you happen to be seasick easily, have what they used to call the mal de mer, which is what they used to call la mer, I seem to recall, don't come. But if you think you can...
Well, Klaus, the only one who got seasick last time was the ship doctor.
Perfect. Just a few days before our conversation today, you had a live adventure in good music at Blossom in one of our festival forums. What was the topic of that session?
It was called, you know, and now that you mention it, I never even mentioned the topic to the audience. It just evolved. It was called So What's New? And it was, frankly, an attempt at an evolution of dissonance. Through the ages, what is dissonance? Dissonance, obviously, is something different to everybody, depending on his degree of experience, his degree of tolerance, his degree of open-mindedness. But since the overall, as I understand it, the overall topic for this summer's sessions is contemporary music, I thought it would be good to level with the audience and try to see what is it that grates them.
Well, it was nice to see that you have as much rapport with the live audience as you do with the radio audience. You had a very good response.
Well, of course, that I cherish, being with people to begin with.
Earlier in the program, before you came on to be Mr. Lincoln, we heard a description of your remarkable background in music as a pianist, recitalist, conductor, administrator, consultant, and general idea man. I would assume that you must be a well-organized person to balance all these many activities and still have time to eat and sleep. How do you do it?
Well, sitting across from you, you probably see that even though I have been very successful in losing weight, I do find time to eat.
But you do it by, as you said earlier, not thinking about it.
Right.
You simply do it.
Well, you have to address yourself to any given task at a given moment, and you can't, I mean, you'll get lost if you let it overwhelm you. My goodness, I have to do this and that by such and such a date. You do things as they come along and really pretend that they are the only thing that your whole life is concerned with. Otherwise, you can't
and
do
you
it.
And you do those with complete concentration at that moment.
Yes. Yes, I can honestly say.
I noticed this once in talking with Albert Schweitzer, that for that 30 seconds that you talked with him, his total concentration was directed toward that conversation and toward nothing else.
Well, I'm awed that you should mention that.
That's how he must have gotten so much done.
Well, of course, he was a phenomenon. He was a genius.
Carl, your accomplishment as an all-around cultural activist has been widely honored by the governments of France and Germany, by 3 honorary doctorates, and by numerous awards for your various radio series. Are there still any activities in music or the arts that you have not yet been engaged in and are planning or hoping to?
Tell me.
Well, I'm asking you.
I can't think of anything offhand.
How's conducting? Everybody sooner or later conducts.
Well, I must say that I love to conduct. I have no ambitions to become another Lorin Maazel, because that's not possible. But I do enjoy conducting an orchestra in the framework of a program that I do in public, where I use, instead of records as I do on the air, where I use live music. And there, it's a great joy. So in other words, it's a functional conducting rather than a conducting for its own sake.
There was a conductor in England by the name of Carl Haas,
right,
who did things with the Baroque Ensemble. You told me once it was a wonderful mix-up when you got to London, isn't that right?
Do you have time for that?
Yes, tell it quickly.
It's a great story. It was the late Dame Myra Hess who got us together. He said to me in London one day, he said, if it's the last thing I do, I must get you two together. He was a bachelor, the other Carl Haas, and she called his flat. He wasn't home, and the housekeeper answered, and she left word with her to have him call my hotel the next morning. At 9 o'clock, the phone rang in the hotel, and I picked up the receiver, and here was the voice. It said, "This is Carl Haas calling. Is someone pulling my leg?" And that day we had lunch together with Myra Hess, and this is how we met.
That's marvelous. I used to hear his recordings years ago.
Very unusual things.
Chamber music and concerto music. And for a while, I didn't know which was which.
And incidentally, do you know how he got a hold of some of these things? He had them all on microfilm and hid the microfilm on his person when he escaped from Germany via Shanghai. He came to London. This was during the Nazi period.
That's quite a story. Well, he is no longer living, so you are the only musical Carl Haas on the scene.
Well, it may be Carl, but you've got a Ken Haas,
yes,
right here.
Right,
you know.
Our manager. He may be a distant relative.
I'll have to find out.
It's been our very special pleasure to talk with one of the soloists on today's program, a man we really feel we know well here in the Cleveland area through WCLV Radio and nationally over many stations. Many thanks to Carl Haas for being our guest today, and we look forward to an almost instant reunion when next the slow movement from Beethoven's Pathetique Sonata heralds another exciting adventure in good music.
Klaus, being with you is a great pleasure.
Thank you so much. And now back to Robert Conrad.